Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and the publisher of The Timberjades, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Here we are again, Marshall. Thanks for being back.
Oh, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, last week you told us about a spike in COVID numbers in the Ely area. Tell us what's new there.
Well, the good news is that the numbers in Ely have come down. I mean, there were 18 new cases in the last week in Ely, but that's about half the number of cases that were reported the week before. So I guess we'll take that. The key measure of COVID activity, which is the 7-day case average, back on March 22nd, we were up at 39.8, which is really high. I think anything above 25 is considered, you know, out of control community spread. So that was a pretty scary number, one we hadn't seen for quite a while. And now the good news is that has since dropped to 15.9, which is still, you know, a lot higher than what we had been seeing back in, you know, February, when it seemed like we were on the downward slide here with COVID cases. So obviously we've had this spike, and it seems like the worst of it may be behind us. It was interesting that Ely outbreak accounted for 70% of the cases in northern St. Louis County last month. So that's why we saw that big jump in the northern part of the county here, was just because of Ely for the most part. And as a result of this, of course, we had talked last week that, you know, the Ely schools had gone to distance learning as a result of these additional cases. And they had hoped to maybe come back this week, but just given the situation, they've opted to stay out at distance learning this week. And now they're saying they're going to watch and hope to maybe bring kids back into school on Monday, the 12th of April. I guess we will see how that works out if they're willing to do that in the end. So overall, of course, the numbers we're seeing across the state are on the rise. And so what we saw here in Ely is not really all that unusual. It's kind of happening in various degrees all across the state, where they're seeing numbers going up, hospitalizations going up, and a lot of this appears to be pushed by that new variant, the B.1.1.7 variant, and that appears to be more contagious, and certainly that's what we're seeing here. So I guess the good news is the most vulnerable folks, the, you know, folks assisted care and things like that, are not having as much of a problem because most of them have been vaccinated. So definitely showing that the vaccinations do help.
Yeah. Well, and I know you and I have both been vaccinated. We want to remind people this keeps our communities safe, or we're going to get out of this thing quicker if you get that vaccine. So please
Absolutely. Do
your part. There's many, many sources where you can get it in towns now. So please consider doing that. I'm kind of begging there, but that's how strongly I feel about that one. So
definitely.
Let's move on to another story you covered this week, a press conference from the Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters. They have some plans and a lot of intentions, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I think, you know, they're more optimistic, obviously, than they were over the past 4 years when they were dealing with an administration that was pretty clearly going to push for, you know, at least verbally making sure that this copper nickel mine, the Twin Metals mine, would move forward. We still don't know that this mine is actually economically viable. We have yet to see any financial predictions from the company. So, I mean, and that's usually part of a mine plan, as you're used, you know, the least ones I've reviewed over the years, you know, they typically come with that financial component. And Twin Metals has not done that with their new mine plan. So, you know, we don't know for sure about the finances on this, and that's a big question mark, clearly. But in either case, you know, folks are taking it seriously, and the campaign has been working. I think they've been working a lot of different angles. You know, they've been doing a lot of advocacy. They've been working with building business coalitions. They've been lobbying in Washington, and they've also been litigating. All of these things now are moving forward, or at least in the direction they want to see. So interestingly, on the litigation front, the two of the existing lawsuits that are currently in place challenging the Trump administration's decision to renew those two mineral leases that are critical to the Twin Metals project, those have been stayed, at least temporarily. And that's in part because the Biden administration has decided that they want to take a look at the Trump administration's position for that renewal and whether or not those renewals were done properly. And so they could come back and actually change the government's position on that, which would probably end the litigation and would likely lead to the rescinding of those leases. So obviously that would be a big decision. And the fact that it is under review right now by the Biden administration is very significant. And then, of course, you do have the current Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. He was the Secretary of Agriculture in the Obama administration when they made the decision to not renew those mineral leases for Twin Metals. So, you know, clearly they made that decision once already, and it comes down to a legal decision that was made, a legal opinion that was drafted by a legal counsel at the Interior Department, by the Trump Interior Department, and based on that, they determined that the government didn't have any discretion to renew. So that's how the Trump administration justified renewing these leases, even though they had already been canceled by the Obama administration. So if after reviewing that determination or legal opinion, the administration decides that that was an error, then they would almost automatically then reverse the decision by the Trump administration, which would most likely put this to an end, at least for a while. And then at the same time, while they're fighting this out in the legal front, they're also pushing for a mineral withdrawal. And this is an administrative action which they are seeking. And this was controversial before. The Obama administration had opted to pursue a 20-year withdrawal of mineral leasing in that area. That would have prevented Twin Metals from coming back and applying for any new leases in that area. They were doing a 2-year study on that, which the Trump administration had canceled as it was nearing completion. And so now there's a push to have that mineral withdrawal study renewed and have it completed. Senator Tina Smith urged both the Interior and the Agriculture Department in a March 28th letter to begin that study again, you know, depending on the results of that study, implement a 20-year mineral withdrawal. And then at the same time, the campaign is working on a permanent protection. This would be, you know, an act of Congress, which is being pushed by Congresswoman Betty McCollum of St. Paul. She has introduced legislation which would permanently ban sulfide in about 234,000 acres of the Superior National Forest, and this would be land that is directly upstream of the boundary waters within the Rainy River watershed. So obviously multiple approaches here, both trying to kind of forestall the mine proposal, trying to push for a temporary, you know, 20-year withdrawal, while at the same time pushing legislation for permanent protection. So that's kind of the game plan that was laid out with a lot of detail. I was surprised. It was a lengthy press conference, but it was quite interesting and really kind of put all the pieces together on what they're doing.
Another story that you covered this week in the Timberjay has to do with a new potential broadband provider coming into Ely. I mean, if we've learned anything in this pandemic, broadband is necessary for everything. Good connection.
Yeah, it sure is. And this was kind of a surprising announcement. Midco, which is a South Dakota-based company, cable provider, and they serve several states in the kind of Midwest and the Plain States. And they are a cable provider actually in Tower, but they don't serve Ely currently. But they announced that they're going to begin installing fiber to the premises to homes in Ely and Winton beginning early next year. And the companies, these connections would be able to provide either 5 or 10 gigabyte per second service to customers there, which is, you know, that's incredibly fast. You know, the definition, I think, for broadband is like 100 megs. So this is many times that amount. So this would be, you know, pretty spectacular. And they also said that in 2023, they would plan to bring the same level of service to Tower, Sedan, and Babbitt. So that is really kind of a major development. Now, at the same time, City of Ely had been working, and still is, with CTC. They're out of the Brainerd-Baxter area, and they're in the midst of installing a state-of-the-art fiber optic network in the city downtown. They're currently selling those services to businesses, you know, kind of in the Main Street area there. So at this point, it's not clear exactly, you know, how those two will mesh, but apparently people in Ely will have a choice of different broadband providers, which is a substantial change in the situation there up until now, which had been that Ely had been kind of bypassed from some other, you know, high-speed broadband projects. And so this looks like good news, potentially, that there's going to be a number of options for broadband. So it's pretty exciting.
That's Marshall Helmberger. This has been the Border News Roundup. You can read and see and find out how to subscribe at timberj.com. Have a great weekend, Marshall. We'll check in next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, Heidi. Even with the babies in